Jolene, 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 Jolene. We're covering this song because we can. This melody is beyond compare, with guitar plucking everywhere, and a sultry seductress named Jolene. The chorus like a breath of spring, her vocals an iconic thing. We're talking Jolene this time on one song.
I mean, at least the notes were right.
Yeah. Accuracy is what we go for in comedy music.
Luxury, my friend, today we are doing something different. Today we are going country.
Yes, very different for us.
Very different for us. Mm-hmm. Very different for me. I will often say to people, the one genre where I feel like I just don't know a whole lot is country. But today we are going country, and we're going to tell you the story of truly one song. You know, we're going to track this song all the way from its genesis, which was apparently sparked by a chance encounter at a bank. But we're going to talk about its genesis, we're going to talk about its recording and its release, and then we're going to examine how this song, which was recorded in 1973, has continued to stay relevant and transcend genres and eras.
That's right, y'all. It has been covered by a really eclectic range of artists, from Olivia Newton-John to Miley Cyrus, Lil Nas X, even the White Stripes had a go. But most recently, the song is at the forefront of popular culture because it was covered by none other than Beyoncé on her recent
Cowboy Carter.
Oh, that's
fantastic.
Right. That's right.
That's right. On this episode, the story of one song and the many Jolenes.
Jolene, 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 Jolene. Please don't take him just because you can.
I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ, Diala Riddle.
And I'm producer, songwriter, and musicologist, Luxury, a.k.a. the guy who talks about interpolation on the internet.
You sure do.
I sure do.
Today, to talk about Jolene, we have a very, very special guest with us. You've seen him on TV on Late Night with Conan O'Brien and The Tonight Show and Conan, and in movies like Elf, Talladega Nights, Blades of Glory. He is a comedy hero of mine. I truly mean that.
Gosh.
Longtime listeners of the show know that I was a writer on Fallon. My writing partner and I, Bashir, we were roommates before we were writing partners. And when I say that we watched you do your thing for so long, Bashir to this day wears a masturbating bear t-shirt. To this day. Like in the most inappropriate setting. So we are
long. Did we sell those or is it homemade?
Might be bootleg.
It must be bootleg.
Has on the diaper and it's very disturbing.
I don't see NBC going like, you know what we need in
You know what Rockefeller
shop?
Center
yeah,
needs?
Yeah, yeah.
It needs bears and diapers masturbating. But listen, he is like us, also a podcaster, and he is the host of Three Questions with Andy Richter. Andy Richter, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And here I should show.
He's got on a Dolly Parton
total
t-shirt.
Coincidence.
Shirt of bonding.
It was
a
coincidence because we were emailing about like what song to do on
right.
the episode. I was suggesting a few. I was like, what about Dolly Parton? What about Jolene? And you, like, moments later, meaning you're in your car.
I was sitting in my car.
You could not have gone to your dress, your bureau,
right.
and picked it out. And you showed me.
I just happened to be wearing this shirt.
You were wearing this shirt. All right. Andy, before we started taping this episode, we were talking a little in the green room. You actually have a genuine history of love for country music, which is perfect because we'll talk about it on this episode.
Yes.
Both y'all and I were not very knowledgeable about the genre. We'll be the first to admit we adore this song and we adore the artist. So that's good enough for the episode to be called One Song. The show is called One Song. But you can fill us in a little bit more and tell us about your history and love for Dolly and country music in general.
Yeah, well, I grew up in the Midwest, in Illinois, but in rural Illinois, which is as much about Chicago, a town called Yorkville.
Okay, cool.
And it's as much about Chicago as it is about Kentucky. You know what I mean?
Really?
And as you get into Illinois, you know, southern Illinois and southern Indiana, it's country. Mm-hmm. And we didn't, nobody growing up, like my mom or my dad or my, you know, like in our house, we didn't listen to country music. But I had aunts and uncles. I was telling you that when I would go down to Springfield, Illinois, go to my Uncle Raymond, to his house, it just seemed like Hee Haw was on the TV around the clock.
And with those freckles they always painted on the makeup.
Yeah, and the freckles and the fake corn cobs and
every
corn
cliche
stalks
in the book, right?
And and also too, they would listen to the Grand Ole Opry too. I would hear that, you know, or and I don't know, it might have even been televised. I can't remember exactly. But so I heard country music and I didn't mm-hmm. dislike it. But it wasn't until I was an adult that I really started to appreciate country music. And by country music I mean old, I mean beyond about 1978. No, thank you. You know, there's a few, you know, like what it passes for country music now to me is just like Bon Jovi with a twang, you
right.
know, with an accent. You
the
know?
Line is very thin. We're going to talk a little bit later on about genres and yes. about like how they're defined and how like a little arbitrary and a lot of overlap there is among them.
Yes.
For exactly that reason. But you're right. And it's interesting you note that because the mid-70s is when, from my understanding, country music does start to massively evolve right. out of the South and out of its sonic realm of sort of, for the 50 years, it had sounded like country music
yes.
of the George Joneses and sort of
right.
Hank Williamses.
It was the Opry,
it
right?
becomes more yeah. commercialized. It starts to integrate other sounds.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that that's right and when you start to tune out a little bit.
There was a big time where, and it was Chet Atkins was, he was an amazing picker. Mm-hmm. And always a deeply respected guitar player, picker, but took over, I believe it was RCA, and brought in this sound with lots of strings.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Like,
right.
you know, Sweet Dream.
That's yeah, the word, yeah. sweeten it up.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And just tons of strings. And that Willie Nelson was actually a reaction to that. You
oh,
know, was that... That was all
that's
like
too fancy.
Too commercial and yeah, too right. fancy and too popped up and too right. New York City and... They wanted to get back to, you know, dope smoking
right.
country.
Yeah, yeah. Itinerant kind of
yeah,
like
yeah.
bad behavior.
Yes.
Men with bad behavior.
Exactly.
I have a question right off the bat. Would we consider Dolly Parton part of this more sweetened up version of country?
Well, I mean, yeah, probably. But she also, too, she's just like, she's above it all. You
yeah.
know, she's
oh,
yeah. her own. And I mean, yes. for a long time, you know, like she was... She was a duo with Porter Wagoner, and she was kind of the girl singer, and that mm-hmm. was always that was a country chestnut of the girl singer.
Did you watch that show? This is a big show in the 60s
I've seen
into the
tapes
70s.
Of it. I yeah. mean, yeah, I mean, I was too little at the time; I wasn't mm-hmm. aware of it at the time. But you know, she talks about wanting to break away and start selling her own songs, and that he didn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't like it, but she, you know. So, yeah, she was part of the system, but when she just has too much talent.
Yeah.
She's just, you know, like
she's
the fact that she wrote Jolene mm-hmm. and I Will Always Love You, like in the same day.
Right.
The same day. We're going right. to talk
the
about
same
that a little
day.
Bit.
Willie Nelson wrote like Crazy and The Nightlife.
Goes down, you will find me hanging down. Nightlife.
But he wrote those songs yeah. in like a day.
Yeah.
Like on a drive from Nashville to Texas as he's driving. Both of them
that's
must
amazing.
Have been visible from space on those days. Like how you can do that
right.
in just
in
a couple
day.
Days.
Yeah.
yeah.
I think on this show we've talked a lot about how some of our favorite songs were crafted in a matter of like 15 minutes to two
yeah.
hours.
Yeah. Just yeah. the initial
you know?
Inspiration comes. And then, of course, the hard part maybe is the recording and like
yeah, yeah.
getting that second verse down. But yeah, Dolly talks about how she has those two. She actually talks about, I found an interview where she says, she thinks she wrote them both on the same night, but they're definitely on the same tape that she found.
Yes.
So her presumption is they came from the same time period because they're
yeah,
next
yeah.
to each other on this tape.
So, Andy, Jolene has remained popular for about 50 years, and it's been covered so many times over the years. Why do you think it endures?
Well, I mean, that hook, the
yeah.
just the guitar hook is
a monster.
Yeah. And I mean, and I heard you trying to play it. It's a,
no, no, I mastered it.
I'm not a guitarist,
it
but
perfectly.
It sounds like a bear to play.
It is
know?
A beast. It is
yeah.
a beast. And Dolly, by the way, is the one who came up with it.
I think it's that lick. And I just think Jolene, 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 Jolene. Like that's
haunting, right?
Yeah.
It's a build. It's
yeah,
a build.
The combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because you've got you know, the guitar lick that's kind of doing something to your nether regions. Right. And then there's the other part that, right. you know,
no, it is
makes
sexual.
You feel like
it's
you're
sexual.
Standing on a cliff overlooking the ocean, you know, for a lost love.
I love that.
You know?
Yeah.
Vocally, we are looking off, you know, off into the distance, 1,000-yard stare.
But our hips are shaking and we can't control it.
But I will also say, I think it's also the subject matter. Like, we're going to talk about storytelling.
Yeah.
And there's a there's some great characters in this song.
Yeah.
And also there's the vulnerability. Which
it's,
is, you know,
all about that. Yeah.
If you can write a song, any kind of pop standard where like the singer is being, you know, vulnerable and not bombastic and you know, full of braggadocio, there's something special there.
Yeah. Well, that's perfect. That brings us back to Dolly. And I wanted to ask you, like, what in particular about Dolly with the t-shirts and everything? What is your connection to Dolly Parton? Like, how do you, what do you feel about her and where do you think that feeling came from?
I mean, there's just the undeniable talent. Mm-hmm. Like she just, and if you watch clips of her, like just on the Tonight Show, like there's a, if there's a clip of her singing a song about being on the Tonight Show called like, you know, being on the Johnny Carson show, and she plays it and she does, she can't play it well because she's got nails. Like she has right. two different kinds of guitar right. playing. There's the with nails and without nails. And it's just amazing. Like it's just
the talent,
the talent, yeah. the talent, the songwriting talent, the singing talent. And then on top of it, charm. And I mean, she's,
I thought you were going to go for the pun with the on top
no,
of it.
No, no, because no,
she
no,
would've.
No. Well,
she
I know she would, but yeah. I mean, big titties, who cares? but just, she's so charming.
Yes.
She's just such, and then when you find out just the stuff that she's done, the goodness
the
that
good
she's brought
stuff,
to
yes,
the world,
done, yep.
in addition to, like, she's so talented, she could have been an asshole her entire life, and we'd still be talking about
every
it.
Every story
instead,
about
instead,
her.
She's yeah. literally yeah. turning down awards, saying, like, I'm not worthy of
right,
that.
Right, right. That's not really what I'm about.
Charm is such yeah. a great word for her, and also, just to get back to the boob joke, because they are inevitable, she will be the first to make them, or
yes.
to head you off at the pass, and make your joke about her boobs funnier.
Absolutely.
And that is a part, that contributes to the charm.
Yeah, yeah.
She is unimpeachable.
Or like I told her, all right, one of my favorite jokes of hers ever
yes.
was at an award show, and she was in a very tight outfit, and she said, I'm something about regretting to wear this out, and her dad had told her that she looked like 50 pounds of shit in a 40-pound bag.
Oh.
Only
she told that joke?
She said shit. I think she'd be like, but that's what he
By
said.
By the way,
you know?
I think you're being a little bit, you know, humble, and I love it, but like you say, oh, when you see her on clips of the Tonight Show, she came on your show a couple of times.
She did, yeah.
And
yeah.
so I'm guessing you've met her, and
Absolutely.
I have to ask, what is she like?
Well, I'm assuming, because I mean, I've had it, and I'm not saying I'm an, well, I guess I am kind of saying I'm an expert. I've been around a lot of famous people.
Yes.
Like to
you
the point where
expert.
I forget if
you're...
I've met certain famous people. But you can, I feel like I do, and I might be kidding myself in some cases, I can tell like whether somebody's just playing nice or whether they're actually nice.
Yeah.
And she's one where it's like, what you yeah. see is what you get. I mean, and I just cannot believe that that is anything but that. And she just, there are people that just have what I can only consider a strength of character,
mm-hmm.
which means that no matter what situation they go into, they are the same person that
yeah.
they were years before all the fabulous stuff happened to them. And they have been that same person walking throughout their entire
That's
life.
So cool. And it reads too. You can tell. You can pick
Absolutely.
Up on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, after the break, we'll talk through Dolly Parton's Jolene, and we'll also be talking about the Beyoncé version. All that after this break. Welcome back to One Song. All right, Luxury, let's talk about Jolene. Why don't you walk us through the writing of Jolene, and please tell us, who was Jolene?
Let's talk a little bit about Miss Dolly Rebecca Parton, who, as Ooh. We talked alluded to,
okay.
Was born in a one-room cabin on the banks of the Little Pigeon River, which is in Pittman Center, Tennessee. She was one of 12 children that her
yeah.
mother, Avie Lee, had by the age of 35. So 12 kids by the time she was
Can
35.
Can you imagine?
I can't even do the math on that. There was no breaks in between.
Right, right.
It all just happened.
Wow.
And
Any
I bring,
twins in there, do we know?
Like, I'm not sure.
12 by 35.
I know there were six
right.
boys, six girls, And I bring up Miss Avi Lee because Miss Parton credits her songwriting from her mom's storytelling. And that's interesting to me because as I do my recent investigation on country music, as we mentioned, I'm not an expert in this. In fact, Jolene is probably my most favorite country song by a country mile because I just simply don't know the genre very much. But what I do know is that it is very much about storytelling and lyrics first. And what's fascinating, if you do the deep dive, and I recommend the Ken Burns documentary that we've been talking about.
Yeah, we love that documentary.
If you haven't seen it, it is wonderful stuff. But they really talk about and hammer home the point that so many of these stories have been in circulation for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
In this case, in particular, Dolly's mother's ancestors were Welsh. There's also a lot of Scots-Irish. These are stories that people told their kids for one generation to the next.
Yeah.
And by the time they come to America, and by this unique combination of instrumentation with like banjos coming from Africa and the slaves, and we have like Hawaiian pedal steel comes from Hawaii, all these incredible, and violin. All of these influences with the stories on top are kind of the origins of country music, but the storytelling front and center. So all this to say, as we get into the story of the song, which is itself a story, that's something that's really struck me about country music. It may be different from some other genres. I mean, certainly there are other genres. We were talking about how hip hop has the lyric centric nature.
Yeah, I was thinking it's interesting because I think all genres have like those, you know, revered storytellers. Mm-hmm. You know, anytime I think, I'm always like, oh, Nas when he does New York State of Mind, Biggie when he does I've Got a Story to Tell. Even like, you know, Slick Rick, A Children's Story. You know, it's beginning, middle, and end. Like, you know, it's perfectly structured, and the ability to tell a story while rhyming is incredibly difficult. So,
yeah,
I think that that's one thing.
But that's what draws you in, and you're just...
It draws you in.
So one thing also I want to say about the storytelling, the meta of the meta... So I was just in Nashville a few weeks ago. I went to the Country Music Hall of Fame. I also went to RCA Studio B where the song was recorded. And one thing that struck me as I was only in Nashville 48 hours, but at the studio, logically, I heard the story about how Jolene was made and the story of how it was the same night that she wrote I Will Always Love You. But it wasn't the only time on this trip to Nashville I heard those stories. And what sort of struck me about it is that the storytelling about storytelling is itself its own sort of genre of thing. We love the song. We listen to Jolene over and over again. I can hear the story of how Jolene was made over and over again. And when you listen to interviews with Dolly, she tells the same story over and over again. It's its own pleasurable thing to re-experience.
Yeah.
And so basically the story, as we may have heard many times, I'll tell it briefly one more time, is that there are two different things that coalesce. One, she's playing a show and there's a girl who comes up for an autograph afterwards and Dolly says, what's your name? And she says, my name is Jolene. And she walks away from that and in her head, it just struck a chord, this name. And she starts going, Jolene, 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 Jolene. And right there, she discovers her melody and her song and the repetition of the name itself that happened as she was trying to remember it.
Yeah.
That becomes the song. And then so part two, what's married to that, and as she has this idea, like, oh, what should the story be about? She attaches to that melody, the word, the name, and this sort of phrase, this chorus, the fact that her husband, Carl, by the way, we should mention Carl, shout out to Carl.
Carl.
They got married when they were, I think, 20, when she was 21. They've been married this whole time, 50-plus years. There's about 8 photographs of Carl Dean in circulation. She's very protective of him. He's not interested in being a celebrity.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting part of the Dolly Parton phenomenon as well, because that obviously provokes lots of questions and mystery and uncertainty. So Carl, according to legend, went to the bank. There was a teller there with red hair. And he's going to the bank a little more often than Dolly feels comfortable with. She's like, why do you keep going to the bank? And then one day she sees the teller there. She's like, oh.
Why are you pulling $1 out at a time?
You can be a little more efficient, Carl. I know you're not a
mathematician. Well, getting a lot of ones usually indicates another kind of
another type of infidelity.
A little suspicious. So that is the story of Jolene, according to legend, these two things. And again, you will hear her tell this story for these last 50 years over and over again in every interview. And they're probably true, but it almost doesn't matter. Like, it's perfect. Those are great little things to tell. So without further ado, let's get into the stems.
Let's get into the stems. I think you're going to start with
the story behind the song. So I did mention that this song was recorded at RCA Studio B in Nashville, Tennessee. It was recorded on May 22nd, 1973, or possibly June 12th. There's some differing liner notes I was able to find. But in 1973, she goes
into the
studio. The song is a Gemini. It's somewhere in that range. And the drums were done by a gentleman called Kenny Malone. and they sound a little bit like this. And you can hear the bleed. It's playing with headphones on, maybe, or just in the other room with some separation. That's pretty much the beat. It's kind of like a bit of a disco beat, frankly.
I was going to say, for 1973, that is kind of a disco beat. And I will say that most of my relationship with the song Jolene is when I was an open format DJ, meaning a DJ who could spin pretty much anything as long as people kept dancing.
Yeah, yeah.
In the 2000s. Open format DJs, we loved this song because, you know, you could blend it with, it's about 120 BPM.
Yep,
I'm sure the internet will be like, it's 121.
It's 116.
It's 116. Yep. Okay, so it's, but you know, like, you can, you can juice it up a little bit.
It is a driving song that, like you say, mixes in with dance music.
Yeah.
And again, which then to have this core of it be this vulnerability. Is really this compelling. It's really compelling, you know?
It's got a dancey beat, but it's a confession.
It's like aggressive vulnerability, you know?
Yeah. And literally on her, when she debuted the song on the Porter Wagoner show, that's how she described it. She said, it's an old-time folk song with an up-to-date beat. So there's clearly some awareness that this beat would sort of bring modernity to the genre, to the song.
Right.
So that's pretty much what Mr. Malone plays throughout the entire track. Nothing fancy. But then about halfway through, some congas enter, adding some more, frankly, you know, funk and disco elements or black music elements. These are African instruments. And that sounds like this. So it is deeply funky.
I mean, you could have put Marvin Gaye over that.
Yeah, right?
That definitely sounds like something that could have come out of Hitsville in 1973.
When you take the top part off, you know, this song is very flexible genre-wise, which is kind of some foreshadowing to what we'll talk about a little later.
I never have, if you'd said to me, are there congas in Jolene, I would have said, I don't think so.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that I didn't notice until I pulled back, looked under the hood myself, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let's talk about the bass, which I believe is by Mr. Bobby Dyson. He starts off, what's funny about this song too, and it speaks a lot to how songs are recorded in Nashville. You know, a lot of times it is the rule, not the exception, it's safe to say. A songwriter will go in with a song and there will be a team of professional musicians, like the guys. And they just, all day long, they are recording song after song after song. There may not be a lot of takes. There may not be a lot of rehearsals. They'll look at the score, which is like the chart, basically, a basic musical, what would you call it?
Roadmap, maybe?
Oh, perfect. Yeah. I like that. I like roadmap.
Blueprint.
If you will. And that'll give them enough to be like, to pick up. It'll just be the chords. It'll just be the changes. And in this case, I hear in the bass that he starts out with something. He just starts out with like a chord. And then he's like, oh, okay, I think I got this. Then he starts playing the bass line. And that's for the rest of the song. He doesn't do that first thing ever again. So I'll just play that for you. And then he's like, quarter note, boom, boom.
That's where it gets country to me.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
And then it gets funky.
Yeah.
And then it starts to get a little funky.
Did they record all of this? Are we getting bleed because it was recorded all at once?
Yeah, this is being recorded live in that studio, in where I just was, in RCA Studio B in Nashville. Yeah. And you can kind of hear Dolly in the background. Isn't that haunting?
That bleed, yeah.
There is this little middle, it's not eight, middle 10. I'll talk about the unusual numbers of the song in a second. But normally you'd have a bridge or what we'd call a middle eight in like a Beatles song. The British call it the middle eight. But it's usually literally eight bars. In this song, it's 10 bars for reasons I'll explain in a second. That's the one change where it kind of gets mellow for a second. Let's hear what the bass does there. It gets a little chill. And then he starts to come back a little louder. So that's interesting. Let's lock it in together and put the bass and drums together and see what that feels like. That is just hella funky.
Now all I can hear are the congas.
That's all
I can hear. Like, I'm like, that's a nice touch.
That's like, feels like it would be really fun to play, too.
That sounds great.
That's a groove. Stone groove.
Yeah, that could be a funk song.
It really could.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or the theme song to an early Muppet show. Like, I can totally see
Kermit. Or a Quinn Martin production. Like, you know.
There's a story behind the guitars on this song. Is that the story?
So Dolly Parton wrote that famous guitar lick. I'm going to play it for you, but I'm going to tell you the story afterwards. So this is Chip Young on guitar, and I'll explain why it's not Dolly in a minute. And this is the thumb picking part, which is the riff, the iconic riff by Chip Young. And here it is. And I'll stop it right there, right as it's going into the second part, which I'll explain a little bit about. So I mentioned that there's some funny timing stuff in this. The bars, like usually with songs, it's pretty common in pop music. You got like these, your brain expects there to be groups of four. So it'll be like four bars or eight bars or 16 bars or something, right? And then your body's like, oh, it's about to go into the chorus. You know it because you're mentally, your body's counting it. In this case, it's unusual. This, the Jolene section, the chorus is 5.5 bars. So I'll count it with you and I'll play the guitar part. And you'll hear he's also not doing the finger picking in this. So here's the guitar in the Jolene part. Picture Dolly singing it. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. So that's unusual. And that's, I think, part of the effect of the song and the surprise in it comes from your sort of hesitant. It stops short. You're only getting half of a bar, and then suddenly you're into the next thing.
How do you feel about that? Like, is that
sometimes? And I love this show, but sometimes you got it's like it feels more like math. I mean, you know,
there is a little bit of math. Yeah, I did not warn you, and I apologize.
But I
mean,
I don't exactly know what you're talking about.
Okay,
you know, and I can understand. Like, I understand. Like, I understand what that. What that hook does and what that riff does. But like if you'd said, oh, there's a 1-2 there in the middle, I would take 2 years and never have
figured
that out.
No, you know what's interesting? I'm so glad you bring that. And the song's about vulnerability. Thank you for being vulnerable.
Sure.
No, you know, like there are times when because I didn't play an instrument with like chords and notes, like I was a drummer.
Yeah.
Like I only know the math. I only know how to count.
Right.
So I know what you're saying. And as a drummer, I do feel like we often feel like when you step away from four, do you know what 4-4 is?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So when you step away from 4-4, things get really interesting. And I'm so glad that he brought that up because in my head, I didn't notice it until he brought up that, you know, it kind of goes to 5, which is insane. That extra thing in there is what makes the song feel kind of reflective.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's got this cool danceable beat, but then it's like, it's like when you're hit with a deep thought while dancing. You know, dancing, then you're like, oh, wait a second. Okay, back to dancing.
There's a little stagger.
There's like an extra count in there for some reflection on the behalf of Dolly. I'm so glad.
And it makes it stand out, too. It's a subtle little thing, and you don't, as a listener, you don't have to know what happened. And for years, I didn't know till I stopped to sort of try and figure it out for this episode.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Oh, that's so unusual that it's only half a bar in that one section, and it doesn't add up to 8 total. And that's just a contribution to the song, kind of like the funk beat. All these things together make it Jolene, but no single thing has like outsized importance. Well, earlier we talked about Porter Wagoner and we talked about their relationship. And as I mentioned, I was very moved by the entire story of Dolly Parton and Porter Wagoner. It starts out with him basically taking her under his wing on this show and essentially with their duets on TV for 7 years and bringing her into RCA for a record deal. He absolutely helps to make her famous.
Yeah.
And she's appreciative. But by 1973, she's over it. And that night that she wrote Jolene, she also wrote a song about Porter Wagoner called I Will Always Love You, which is about her leaving the show. And she tells the story, and Dolly Parton fans and Jolene fans, it's one that I have seen and heard in many podcasts and videos, of bringing it to Porter. And this is sort of how she tells him that it's over.
Yeah.
And he's really upset. But in the moment of her being, when the song is played to him, it helps soften kind of the blow of it being kind of a career ending thing for him and career beginning for her. All this to say, and I'm going to tell the end of that story later, but in this moment when the song is recorded, Porter Wagoner says, hey, let me play that. And he picks up the guitar to try to play the da-da-da-da-da-da-da, because Dolly brings it in, and it's her lick, but her nails are too long, so she can't play it. Porter's like, hand me that guitar, I want to try it. And he can't do it, and it's a little humiliating. And in the room, it's just a moment where it's sort of the beginning of the end. It's happening in real time, and there's some sense of like, you know, this guy is trying to control Dolly, but Dolly's not going to let it happen.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Yeah. Were they just colleagues and never romantically linked?
There's a lot because of I will always love you.
It sounds like a love song.
They have never explicitly described what happened behind the scenes. Okay. They have never denied it.
Yeah.
There are a million interviews with both of them where they'll allude to not yes, but not no.
Yeah.
It's this really ambiguous middle ground. Yeah. Do you know about this?
I mean, I've heard that about it. But I mean, but it also too, I mean, what just strikes me, and I've heard that story before, but this is the first time that it struck me about, I don't necessarily think that I don't think that what I'm going to say exists, or there's a possibility it doesn't exist. And if it does exist, it could have been one of many things. But there is a Machiavellian genius to kissing off your boss with what has become
beautiful song,
you know, massive. A modern American classic standard. Right. You know,
I love that.
And that if you're going to say goodbye to, it's like breaking up with someone and saying, here's $100,000, you know, or, you know, like, here's a gold statue of you.
Right.
It's, I mean, I'm sure that
or here's $100,000, but it's mine.
Well, but I mean, but it's still, in terms of emotion, it's an emotional hunt. Like, to say, to have, like, imagine Dolly Parton saying, I wrote I Will Always Love You about you.
Yeah.
And as sad as it is, it's also, and I mean, when you look at the way Porter Wagoner dresses, I think that's an ego-driven person.
So, you think so? Yeah.
You there's some confidence in ego there.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that, like, appealing to his ego with a...
Yes, wow.
With,
that's,
you know, like...
Wow,
he broke you know, psychologically.
Yeah,
he
yeah. That I think that appealing to his ego to say bye is a great, like, misdirection. Like,
that's really brilliant. I think you're right. Yeah. And saying I will always love you, and tying up the ambiguity of what their relationship is, is perfect, because from his ego, it's also clear when you listen to him hedge the question in interviews that he wants you to think that they're they're boning,
right.
So that gives him a little bit of that juice as well, right? So just long story short, Porter wasn't letting Dolly play the guitar, and Dolly tells the story. He wanted to impress the musicians with that lick. I remember him trying to teach it to the guitar players on that session. It was not coming out right at all. I remember I was just getting more and more upset. And I remember just getting the guitar from Porter and saying, just let me show them the lick. So Dolly picks it up, shows Chip Young the lick. Chip Young plays it to perfection. And that's what you hear in the final version of the song.
Wow. Yeah.
Let's play a couple more sections from the song that you may not have noticed before. That lick, actually, the finger picking really happens only at the beginning and a little bit towards the end. For most of the song, what you're hearing sounds more like this. And you're obviously hearing several guitars in there. There's at least three by my ears count. Some of the names that show up on the credits include Jimmy Colvard and Dave Kirby. And then there's also a note for Stu Besor, I believe, is... It's either Stu Besor or Wayne Moss on the steel string. And that's what this is coming in here. And by the way, I should say
that is sweet. That is plenty sweet.
I'm just going to say, like, I'm pretty sure I'm hearing some banjo and some fiddle in there. It's a little difficult to pick out all the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly in that moment with that rising... Da, da,
yeah, and
da,
the da. And the steel guitar almost sounds like strings, too.
It, absolutely, you know? Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot happening in that mix. But it's really beautiful. And that's the moment that kind of emotionally we're going to the next level with that rise.
Yeah. Luxury, are we ever going to get to the vocals? All these instruments are great.
I know, I'm sorry,
but,
Andy.
You know, it's a Dolly Parton song, and so far we've barely heard any Dolly Parton.
I have upset our guests, and I apologize.
No, we should use you saying that every episode. Hey, are we ever going to get to the vocals?
Let's get to the words.
Guys, I am so sorry it took so long to get to the meat and potatoes of the song, but here they are, Meat and Potatoes by Dolly Parton.
We want Jolene.
Oh.
But Meat and Potatoes is
it's a
straight bop.
It's a Dolly Parton song for sure.
She's definitely written that.
Except it would probably be Taters.
Jolene, I'm begging of you, please. take my man.
So let's just start right there. I mean, haunting.
Yeah.
Do you have so, one word? So I want a one-word answer.
Yeah, haunting. And you know, and there is something very, and her voice on many songs, there's so much vibrato,
yeah,
and it's so like kind of light and
right,
high and airy. But this has real guts to it. Like, yeah, when she's singing that, it's not just kind of that tweedly, you know.
It's got some richness to
it. Yeah,
yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because from my understanding of her history, she had trouble breaking through in the industry until Porter Wagoner, because they thought her voice was too high.
Yeah.
There just weren't that many women, period, singing
like that.
But secondly,
yeah,
women singing high, and her voice was unusually high.
Yeah.
But she's like, maybe she started to like work it in this new range. And I think you're right. She's found kind of like, it's sort of like a huskier zone in addition.
Yeah.
Can we hear some of the vocals from the first verse?
Let's do that.
Your smile is like a breath of spring. Your voice is soft like summer rain. And I cannot compete with you, Jolene.
That's pretty good songwriting, too. I mean, that's a lot of information.
Right.
There's a lot of
imagery.
Simile. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, is like the cheapest shit of songwriting,
right?
Simile. And it soft all.
Soft as summer rain? Is
it's
that what
all,
you're talking about?
Yeah, it's all not a wasted syllable.
You're right.
It all hits and hits hard and gets out everything you need to say. And like that, just that rush description of her is like,
you can picture this person.
Jolene is fucking hot.
Yeah.
You know?
She's hot, and you know exactly what she looks like. And I cannot compete with you, Jolene.
Yeah.
It's like the ending line.
It's
Cole Porter would be happy about this.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's listen to that middle 10 section, the chill part, the ink spots portion.
I had to have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you and whatever you decide to do, Jolene.
It's so
whatever you decide to do.
That line always
gets
me,
all the power.
Yeah.
I can't do anything. I'm at your mercy.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing we touched on earlier is the vulnerability
right
in the song. Andy, do you hear that in the role?
Oh, vocals? My God. Yeah, yeah. And this is also, and I know we're going to talk about the Beyonce version, which is not vulnerable.
And it's coming.
We have some stuff to say about that, too.
Yeah, but this, you know. But this song is, and I mean, there are certainly vulnerable songs in country music, but that, you know, surprise, surprise, it was a very sexist industry at that time, still pretty sexist, but, you know, but yet the sort of classic country woman song about a man is, you ain't woman enough to take my man, or you're going to Fist City.
Right, which are Loretta, Fist City. I love that
Loretta
song.
Lynn songs about, you know, hands off, he's mine. Mm-hmm. I'm jumping to ska.
English beat,
Yeah. But that there was an aggressive kind of honky tonk. We'll mix it up. So that this is there's not. I can't think of another
this
country
is a new
song.
Voice, right?
Yeah,
it's a
that's
new
like
way
that is just like. Story. Please, you know, like I'm begging you.
I'm begging, I'm pleading.
Whatever you decide
I
to
got
do.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Yeah,
please.
Yeah.
Is please enough?
Yeah. And it, but you know, it is like, again, at the center of this song that is all power and skill and talent is, you know, I'm scared to death that I'm going to be alone.
Right.
You know?
I'm going to lose my man.
Yeah. And also, too, this is a powerful woman. Mm-hmm. This is like, even as you're listening to this song, Dolly Parton she's a star, you know? Like there's not a lot of-
Yeah, 1973, she's a star, absolutely.
There's not a lot of stars who are saying, you know, I'm threatened by another woman, please, just for the sake of my happiness, leave him alone.
Right, you're right. That's pretty fearless of her to be doing
that. Yeah, yeah.
Breaking some of the rules of the genre and of a woman singing in the genre, absolutely pioneering it. Well, I would not be able to close out the song without playing you my favorite part of the song, the most haunting part of the song, and it only happens briefly, and then the song is over. But the final spooky Jolene.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's hear that isolated.
Jolene. Jolene.
That's fucking insane.
Yeah.
That is a crazy choice.
Yeah.
What was going on in RCA Studios that day?
I mean, just like the fact that it only happens once and it's the tail end. And
how's it accomplished? How does that, is that a
sounds multi-tracked, like, but it's her. A multi-track, yeah, right? Yeah, I would think.
There are some background vocalists that are credited in one version that I found. Yeah, there's three. Herschel Wigginton, June Page, Dolores Edgen, and Joe Babcock could be in there.
Joe Babcock?
It actually sounds like her voice, though, multi-tracked.
It does.
I don't know
that.
Yeah. I don't hear different voices in there. Mm. Let's play it one more time, and let's like really dig deep on the archaeology of this moment.
That's Joe Babcock.
I would love to.
I totally heard him. That's classic Joe. classic cock.
I would love to know how that came about, just that one moment, that decision, those notes, that it only happens at the end.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
You wonder if like the engineer had been like listening to like Pet Sounds recently. But it's just like, hey, maybe we could do this weird thing, and I've wanted to try so long.
But it's a desperate plea, right? This is like, it's like you hear off in the distance, like fading away, like Jolene.
Yeah.
She's like falling over a cliff or something.
Yeah. No, it's very ghostly.
I feel like, I'm not sure. Look, I'm just going to say it as a songwriter.
And
I'm no Dolly Parton. I don't think I need to tell anybody in this room or listen to the show. I am no Dolly Parton on any level. However, I was struck just now when we listened to the lyrics. I had to have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you. Okay, that a little bit bothers me that the rhyme
you and you,
is the same. I will say it. I'm going to hot take on the show.
All right.
You can never rhyme the same word with the same word?
I mean,
it is a little cheap.
It's a little bit cheap.
Y'all could not have listened to those early Master P albums. You would have been very disappointed.
and also the fact is,
No, this is not the time nor the place for old Master P lyrics. Please continue.
No, I mean, I've heard this song a gazillion times, and that never struck me. And that kind of stuff strikes me all the time, and I'm like,
as a writer,
shame on you.
Yeah. Your writing or your editing brain, it's like when you just see it raw like that, you're like, should we try a little harder on this?
Should we
try to find a rhyme for the word you? There's a few options.
I think it speaks to how wonderful her delivery was that you guys never really noticed.
Yeah,
you know,
like, that's true.
That's what I'm saying. There's so much else going. It's like, maybe a little cheapy here. You know?
Yeah, she's earned it.
Well, let's just close the loop on the Porter Wagoner story. It ends kind of interestingly. So this is the moment where things go to hell. She writes the song, presents it to him, and then leaves. And then he sues her. For $1 million. Very acrimonious split. And long story short,
$1 million.
$1 million in 1973 for Dolly Parton's a lot of money. She doesn't have it yet. So she, over time, pays him back. And then Porter Wagoner has a dark moment where his career kind of ends, essentially. He's not in a good place. He owes the IRS a lot of money. Water's under the bridge. Many years have gone by. And Dolly Parton, in an act, a very beautiful act, literally Dolly Parton buys his music publishing company as a gesture, as a way of compensating, as a way of giving him money and buying an asset, I suppose. Not that he was a big hit songwriter. He didn't need to do it. But there he goes on his deathbed. She comes and they have kind of a moment of reconciliation. I was very moved reading all this stuff. She did not have to do that.
Yeah.
She did not have to buy his publishing company, the value of which nowhere near exceeds, you know, matches her own.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, don't we all kind of want Dolly Parton by our side when the time comes? Like, Dolly Parton by your bedside is
time to pull the plug.
Goals, I think.
Yeah,
like we said, this song it connects with people. She's so human in it, and I don't think it's a surprise to anybody that this song starts getting covered by other artists almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Almost immediately. It is so ironic that we're all talking about the Beyoncé cover, because the very first cover that we could find of this song is actually not even a year has passed. It's you know, this song was released in 1973. Before 1973 is over, this song is covered by soul singer Gloria Ann Taylor. So, you know, we're talking about the Beyoncé cover.
Yeah.
You know, she's an R&B artist.
Yeah.
The first person that we can find to cover Jolene is an R&B artist, a black woman. Singer Gloria Ann Taylor, and her version of Jolene sounds like this.
Your beauty is beyond bear, with long dark and wavy hair, golden skin and eyes of emerald green.
No, wavy hair and golden skin.
She changed the description.
Right, right.
Jolene. I was curious if that was going to happen. So not only is R&B artists covering Jolene nothing new, changing the lyrics to suit the singer, also nothing new.
Right.
Then there was the Olivia Newton-John version from 1976. Let's hear a little bit of...
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
O-N-J. Can I say, Olivia Newton-John has such a distinct voice.
Yeah, she does.
Even when she's singing like Dolly, like, she's got something that, you know, taps into the soul of people who were born in the 1970s. I'm convinced.
It's when she hits the high note, you're like, oh, there she is. There she is.
There she is.
And I'm not a musician, but is that guitar lick dumbed down for somebody that probably couldn't handle the original Jolene lick?
Well, that's finger picking is what's done in the original.
Yeah, and this is its own.
That's its own thing to master.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very possible that this guitar player either couldn't do it or didn't. It might have been a choice to make it more of a rock.
Just simplify it.
To make it more of a rock thing. That's a live performance, so this guy doesn't have the luxury of sitting back.
Yeah.
And doing multiple
takes.
And
it's just
takes on
an electric guitar. It's not acoustic, too.
Yeah, I was hearing that, too. Yeah. I was hearing the simplification there, too.
This song has proved so popular. So it's released in 1973. We were able to find covers of it in every single decade. Popular covers. Covers that actually people listen to in every single decade since its release.
Yeah, and it's funny you should mention that, because I literally first heard the song as a cover. There was a moment in the mid-80s, in fact, I felt like to cover Jolene as a goth rock band, like the Sisters of Mercy, which is where I first heard it.
Oh, yeah.
There was some significance to that. There was some irony, because we talk a lot about how this moment in the 80s, you of all people on the show, we can actually go down a rabbit hole about this, but there's this moment where irony and referencing is becoming more of a mainstream thing. It's not just for the cool kids who read Mad Magazine.
Yes.
It's becoming more of a thing that Dave Letterman is bringing up and later Conan, etc.
Yeah.
So this is the Sisters of Mercy version. This is the first time I heard it. Sisters of Mercy, one of my favorite bands, and I'm so happy I get to play them on the show. This is Jolene with Andrew Eldritch on his dark, dusky baritone.
Jolene, 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 Jolene.
So that is goth
for
you guys.
Wow, that is so funny.
That is goth.
Yeah.
You didn't know.
Well, I think that the thread that carries through is camp.
Camp?
Because, yes.
Yeah. It is
camp.
You're nailing it. That is camp.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
And that's consistent with the original.
Yeah.
To be camp. There is the Dolly campiness. She calls herself Backwoods Barbie.
Right.
This is a Backwoods Barbie. The song has it in its DNA, so when you cover it, you can't help but do that yourself.
Yeah, that's meant to be kind of funny.
And there's nothing else about Sisters of Mercy.
That's funny.
I'm a big fan of this band, but on record, they are funny behind the scenes in interviews. They're not funny musically, that's funny.
Yeah.
By the way, one more, this is not technically a cover, this is more like a remix, but I actually start 98% of my DJ sets with this incredible, a lot of people know there's been a phenomenon for a few years, the meme of slowing down Dolly Parton's Jolene to 33 from 45.
On TikTok.
This is even slower. This is the Peter Visti slow version, and it's 11 minutes long, and it's one of my favorite ways to start a DJ set.
See, this is I don't have any idea about this. I don't know about DJ stuff.
Could you say it with more disdain?
Oh, wow.
This is 81 BPM. This is a very slow...
Did he replay it, or is this...
No, this is just slowed down. But I will play... I'm going to fast forward a little bit in the mix, because a lot happens over 12 minutes.
We're going to play 11 minutes. Up.
And then he's adding some synths on top, adding some drums, and some claps. And it is so hypnotic. You want 12 minutes of this, right?
Yeah.
This is 3 a.m. in the disco. The sun is coming up pretty soon. You're oh, man, I got to come up with a good story.
Right.
Or in my case, it's if I'm the opener and it's my set starts at 7 p.m. and there's not a lot of people yet, you put
this
that
is not the
on.
Time for us to debate
and
this.
It vibes.
Then you want to go first.
Does it ever get to lyrics?
I'll just find that. Very minimal, though.
Yeah.
The 10-minute mark.
Oh, he just uses the spooky part.
This is the trippy psych part of the remix.
This is very much after the hero of our story has been beaten down and he arms himself to attack the drug lord's, you know, home base.
Yes,
and
I
murder
would play this.
Everyone. Yeah,
it's a montage, and it's long and bloody.
Yeah. Michael Mann's the director,
all 12
right?
minutes.
Yep.
You get all 12 minutes.
Yep.
And of course, Beyonce covered Jolene on Cowboy Carter, and she totally reimagined the song. Let's play a little bit of Beyonce's Jolene.
You're beautiful beyond compare. Takes more than beauty and seductive stares to come between a family and a happy man.
Okay, so let's talk about the Beyonce version. We're not even talking from a musical standpoint. Let's talk about the lyrics, because I think that that's been the part that's been, you know, the most debated. Like, there was a critical response to this song.
Which irritates me so much, but go on.
I just want to put it out there. Like, there was an article in Slate that wrote, "Why do Jolene, if you're going to remove the most unique and powerful element of the song, that the narrator is bearing her vulnerability and asking the mercy of her rival?" Now, this is just my take on it real quick, and I want to get yours, Andy and Luxury. My take is actually that, believe it or not, even though on their face the lyrics of the Beyonce version sound more like, you know, a threat, like, hey, don't come for my man, yes, that is literally what she's saying, but my take is that this actually is Beyonce being vulnerable.
Yeah,
not everybody is going to react in the same
it's a different kind of vulnerability.
Way.
There isn't just one vulnerability.
This is a 2024 black woman being vulnerable.
Right.
You know, she's basically, you know, I saw
she feels threatened.
Else,
that's
I saw
the vulnerability.
Else where they were like, yeah, you know, she reduces this song to brag about the greatness of her own marriage. Yes, in literal terms, yes. But I actually think that this is Beyonce sort of saying, like, you know, in her own way, you know, I am vulnerable. I'm not going to show my rival Jolene that I am vulnerable.
Yeah.
But I see vulnerability in these lyrics. I know that's a subtle sort of nuanced thing to say, but I'm feeling it. How did you hear the Beyonce
version? I think, and I do think it's interesting that Dolly does a spoken word intro.
Hey, Miss Honeybee, it's Dolly P. You know that hussy with the good hair you sang about? Reminded me of someone I knew back when. Except she has flaming locks of auburn hair. Bless her heart. Just a hair of a different color, but it hurts just the same.
Dolly loves
it's not
the
good
Beyonce
hair.
Version.
You know, there's some good hair and auburn hair.
Becky,
But I do think, yeah, there's a lack of vulnerability. I see what you're saying, that this is her version of vulnerability. And that a woman saying, "Don't you dare take my man," that is a scared, hurt person underneath that.
Yeah.
But to me, what the main thing is that this version of Jolene is on Beyonce's country album. Mm-hmm. And Beyonce is going into hostile waters. She knows what she's doing by, here's my Beyonce's country album.
Right.
And she knows that the shit that's going to stir up. And she knows that the hostility she's going to be met with.
Mm.
So to go into that and just do a straight up vulnerable version of Jolene, I just think it would be disingenuous.
Yeah, I also
within
like
the context of this album.
Yeah, I also
know?
Feel like it would be a very un-Beyonce thing to do. In
a
fact,
very un-Beyonce thing to do.
She says, like, I loved country music coming up. I used to go to the rodeos and I would see, she was like, I saw black people and Latino and of course white people at the rodeo, and I wanted to do an album. She actually says, you know, we all call it a country album. I think the press release called it, but like if you read what Beyonce said, she's like, this is actually more of a Beyonce album.
Yeah.
With these country and black folk influences more than it is just a straight up country.
She's on a horse. She's on a horse with a cowboy hat. But I just think also too, I'm sure that there's, you know, part of doing this album too is I can't imagine that she wasn't thinking, I'm going to introduce country music to people that have never heard country music.
Absolutely,
and I'm going to pick one of my favorite country songs.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to introduce them to Jolene.
One of the biggest country songs, one of the most iconic ones.
Yeah. And she's going to Beyonce it up.
It's interesting. You're making me think too, because when you do a cover, like I've done a couple of covers in my life. I did. And part of the process is like you're starting with, there's sort of a taste making thing. Like what would be a cool thing to cover?
Yeah.
Hasn't been done before. How can I make it different? How can I put my stamp on it?
Right.
Because otherwise it's karaoke and you're going to lose to
and
the
also
original.
Also something that I genuinely love.
It has to be something I can get inside of and feel passion for. And she chose to not change for example, basically the instrumentation is essentially the same song with the guitar riff, and then we've got a little stomp on the bottom. But as we just heard together, there is already kind of a funk beat in the original too.
Yeah.
She doesn't change that. She's a female vocal, like with the Sisters of Mercy, sometimes if you get a guy singing it when it was a girl originally, that's where the twist can come in too.
Yeah, yeah.
She doesn't change that. She's also a woman. Her changes are the subtle, the lyrical things we're talking about. She also adds a little bit later, she adds a bridge, like a second part to the song. So that's a change. That's a pretty substantial one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's still, it's interesting to that literally it is a cover in the sense that the writing credits only show Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
So technically speaking, it could be an interpolation or an interpolation.
Yeah.
That's what normally this would be.
He gets paid when he whispers it.
Because a cover is very explicitly all of and only the original lyrics.
Right.
But that isn't what's happening here. So it's very interesting the choices she makes to what to keep, what to discard. And I think you're right. They're all intentional.
Yeah.
She intentionally said, I'm going to take a song that people know. I'm not going to change its sound. I'm also a woman singing it.
Yep.
The changes are going to be these subtle areas here, the lyrical content.
And I'm not a Beyoncé expert, but because I'm not like super familiar with her entire catalog. But it seems to me that Beyoncé does not play characters. When Beyonce sings, it's Beyonce, and I think that
that's a really good point.
You know,
really
I don't think that which I imagine at times is probably confining. It's probably you know,
so
it's
so interesting.
You know,
I think you're right.
So I think that she can't sing Jolene as anybody but Beyonce, who's been Beyonce and who's married to Jay-Z.
That's a
super
astute comment, and I'm processing it. There may be a handful of songs. I'm sure the Beehive will be on our case in the comments.
Yeah, they'll say this is her in character.
But for the most part, you're right, and that is a big part of her. That is who she is as an artist.
Yeah,
this authentic. You're hearing her tell her story of how much she loves her man, and we know this. It plays out in the culture too at large. All of her Instagram pictures and all of her whatever she's doing is all part of the narrative of her. Of her, of Beyonce. So
and
she
can. The only Beyonce you get is what she gives you too.
So when like, she does a cover,
she doesn't do interviews. She doesn't do you don't read a lot of like interviews, articles about. It's just what you get of Beyonce. She gives you, and this is she's giving you her version of Jolene, and so it's going to be Beyonce singing Jolene. It's not Beyonce putting on Dolly.
It's not Beyonce putting on a character. I think Beyonce, Taylor Swift does a lot of this. Like, I think certain people are like, this is the part of me that I'm going to share, and that's what. But
yeah.
I got to bring it back around to the issue that like this is Beyonce's version of being vulnerable, and I think that is I think that vulnerability is still there.
I think that's true.
It's what's made this song so popular that it's had as many covers as it's had, so many iterations. I love the fact I'd actually never heard the Sisters of Mercy version. So I mean, like they took it and they made it theirs, and I think that it speaks to Dolly's songwriting that so many people as diverse as Sisters of Mercy and Beyonce can both come to this song, both make their changes, whether musical or lyric, and people still respond to it. It is an amazing song,
right?
That
is a testament to the song.
Yeah,
that underlies all of it.
Yeah,
to that one song. I have a question for you. This particular song has been sung and covered and reimagined for about 50 years now. Do you think in another 50 years, is there a chance that this will still be in the zeitgeist?
I should think so.
Yeah.
I should think so. I do.
The robots might sing it.
I mean, it's hard. You know, I mean, whatever that kind of soothsaying means or But I should think so. I should think that if we're talking about it, and we're not talking about it like because it's on some niche label, you know, that like only the three of us know about.
Right.
We're talking about it because it's out there.
It's out there.
It's a big
front
song.
And center. Yeah.
It's been covered hundreds of times across genres, across decades,
and concurrent with Dolly, you know, Dolly also being out there.
She's a treasure.
At the Super Bowl, singing at the Super Bowl, live at the Super Bowl, and a real, you know, doing a rock album.
Which is
her 49th.
Yeah.
Her 49th record.
And it's pretty damn good, you know? And I mean, one gets the feeling that it's like kind of a last big burst, you know, because she is,
Have to do it.
Yeah.
But she kind of does have to do it. She is a songwriter, a storyteller to her core.
Yep.
Ever since her mama was telling her stories, those Welsh stories that came down from the British Isles of hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
It is so a part of her DNA to be a storyteller. Why would she ever stop?
And also, one of her big things is to give out books. You know, she's provided, I mean, like quietly provided literally millions of books to libraries, primarily in the South, but kind of everywhere.
That's so moving. There's so much about her that I love as a human and as a role model.
As a human, as a vulnerable human. I think as long as we have this universal theme of vulnerability.
And unshamableness.
And unshameable. Yes. Yeah. I think Jolene will continue to be covered. Andy, we want to play a quick game with you, and I want you to know you're going to be the very first guest to play this game.
All right.
Okay? So if it goes horribly wrong, it's on you.
It's my fault. It's my fault.
We're going to let you win. Yeah.
We're going to retire it. It'll be one and done.
It'll be known as getting Richtered.
We might use that expression anyway. Okay, the premise of this game is really simple. We'll give you a scenario, and you give us one song that you would play during this scenario.
Okay, wow.
I hope that makes sense. It'll make sense, trust me. I'll ask you to answer these as quickly as possible.
Okay.
That's the only rule to the game. Okay, it's called, by the way, this game is called...
What's the name of the game?
What's One Song?
Great title.
What's
Great
One title. Song? Okay, Andy, let's start for the first time ever, What's One Song?
Okay. What's a lot of pressure.
There's no wrong answer, though.
It better be good, Andy.
Yeah, all right.
Just has to be funny.
Okay.
All right, here we go. What's one song you love to sing in the shower?
Goldfinger.
What?
From James Bond.
Goldfinger.
Do you change the lyrics?
Everybody imagine.
The man with the Midas touch.
Spider's touch. Such a cold finger.
All right. What's one song you know every word to?
Gosh, there's so many of them. I'm going to say Bridge Over Troubled Waters.
Oh, wonderful. What's one song that makes you want to twerk?
Makes me want to twerk. Probably maybe Shoop.
Okay. No?
That's Salt and Pepper. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. What's one song that makes you cry?
Mother by John Lennon.
Mother, you had me.
Oh, wow. I honestly almost cannot listen to it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, here's the last question. What's one song that we have to do an episode of One Song on?
Oh, wow. I think Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I bet you there's something pretty interesting to Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
I like that choice.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Andy, I'm happy to say you didn't Richter it. You did a great job.
Good job. Yeah. Way to
Why
go.
Why does it have to be negative? I think you did Richter it. Good job.
Oh, thank
nice
you.
Nice Richtering.
See, we keep it positive.
Wonderful
here.
Wonderful Richtering over there.
We have to wrap it up here. But Andy, I just want to thank you so much for coming on and tell our listeners where they can get your podcast.
My podcast is everywhere you get podcasts.
Awesome.
It's called the Three Questions. Yeah, it's called the Three Questions. But it also plays on the Conan Channel, the Conan O'Brien Radio Channel here on Sirius XM. And I will soon be starting up a weekly call-in show on the Conan Channel.
That sounds fun. Yeah, we'll definitely call into your show.
You got your first two callers right here.
Excellent.
We'll be your first two jerky boys.
Okay.
Oh no. Luxury, help me in this thing.
Well, I'm producer, DJ, songwriter, and musicologist Luxury.
And I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ Diallo Riddle.
And this has been One Song. We will see you next week. This episode was produced by our producer, who does not have flaming locks of auburn hair, because he is bald, and his name is Matthew Nelson. Additional production support from a man who does have great hair, and that would be Casey Simonson. Engineering from Marcus Hom.
The show is executive produced by Kevin Hart, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, Eric Weil, and Leslie Guam.